The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
I'm joined now by somebody who I think it's very fair to say is an icon of Irish feminism. She was a founder member of the Irish Women's Liberation Movement, and she has been one of the most extraordinary journalists in Irish life since the late 1960s onwards, particularly in the Irish Times and the Sunday Tribune. She recently wrote a contribution to Una Mullally's book Repeal the Eighth, a collection of stories, essays, poems and art that was edited by Una Mullally. And I was absolutely fascinated by Nell McCafferty's piece, which is why we've asked her to join us on the programme today. Nell, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Matt. Enough of these Japanese courtesies.
I'm just explaining to people who you are and the significance of what you've done. As a feminist icon, I mean, you were almost a feminist revolutionary given what we had in Ireland over the years.
So they say, he should say that.
You've been very modest.
He should say that I'm 74 now. I was born in 1944, and that way people have a context.
Okay. Well, I'm interested. You wrote, you're always very close to your mother. I knew this when I was working with you in the Sunday Tribune. You were devoted to going to your mother up in Derry and looking after her. But I was fascinated by what you wrote about back in the 1983 referendum on inserting the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution in relation to abortion. And you told of a in this piece of a conversation that you had with your mother back then, which was fascinating. Tell us about it.
Yeah, at the 1983, not many people are old enough to remember it. And the airways were full of those who call themselves pro-life, calling the rest of us baby killers if we thought abortion was necessary. My mother was... She liked talking about things anyway, and I said, listen, Mommy, an abortion, it's just a bunch of cells. Don't listen to them. And she said, come you out the scullery with me. And I went out, and she leaned in the kitchen sink and said, when I was first pregnant, I had a miscarriage, and I miscarried onto that piece of newspaper on that floor. She was 4 months pregnant. She said, don't you tell me that was a bunch of cells lying on that floor. And she said, that was my wain, Nell. And I said, what did it look like? And she said, it was too small. It looked like, she pointed to a Lowry painting we had in the house. It looked like those stick people. And it's only lately, with thanks to Google, that I could look up what a miscarriage at 4 months looks like. Right enough, it was. It does look like a stick person. And the doctor who came said it was the most perfect specimen he had ever seen of a miscarriage. And could he take it away and donate it to a hospital in Edinburgh for medical studies? And I said, so I have a brother or sister in Edinburgh, do you, Mum? And she said, oh, grow up. She said, that was my baby, Nell. I was pregnant. And after that conversation, I changed a lot of my attitude to our language about abortion. I would no longer describe it as a bunch of cells, and I'm very conscious that for women who have miscarriages, they've actually lost a baby. And when I made a few inquiries, I discovered that Crumlin, and the gardens in Crumlin are full of miscarriages. People took them out to the garden and buried them because that's what if you didn't get to hospital in time, that's what they advised. This was long before the 1983 amendment, when the government suddenly stood up and had provided what they called angel plots, stuff like that. But until they came up with angel plots, your miscarriage was buried in back gardens. And I've been pondering that ever since, Matt. And what really I've been pondering is of course you've miscarried your pregnancy, Mother. Of course it was your baby. Even if you couldn't tell whether it was a boy or a girl. Is abortion now, are you terminating, killing the babies? Or are you ending a potential life? And I had to speak about that in Ballybunion, County Kerry this weekend at a media conference. I said I was unable to answer the question, is it human life or ending a form of life? And I said, because I always talk to myself until I get an answer. I said I was unable to come to a conclusion, and then I realised I was unwilling to come to a conclusion. What does abortion mean? And since they have proposed now the new amendment to vote yes to legalise abortion, I raised the question in Kerry at the weekend. Are we killing babies? Are we terminating pregnancies? I then added that I never discuss abortion without, in the same paragraph, mentioning contraception, artificial contraception, and the fact that at the moment there is no room at the inn. Or as someone said to me, there's actually no room on the floor for people, women, who are about to give birth. And this whole discussion we're having these days about abortion, it isn't a discussion at all. For example, those who call themselves pro-life, I call them now pro-birth. Once the baby is born, they lose all interest and you're on your own. And that's why I say, well, shouldn't we be discussing homelessness? And in order to reduce the rate of abortion, shouldn't we be discussing the use of artificial contraception, which the pro-lifers have not been asked about? If I remember 1983 correctly, they were all against the use of artificial contraception because they said it was an abortive fashion. And they're not being asked that question now, nor are they addressing it. And indeed, I'm looking at their poster saying, love both the pregnant woman. And I think, why are you wiping out men? Have you such a low opinion of men that they can't be considered? Are you afraid, instead of saying love both, do you say love menage a trois? They don't mention it, and they're not out campaigning against homelessness. They're not out talking about artificial contraception. And indeed, Matt, when the government talks about it, our ministers, I notice Leo Varadkar does not in the same breath talk about abortion and the use of contraception.
Now, what sort of reaction did you get in Ballybunion at the weekend? I mean, was there a surprise from all the other women from the media who were there to hear you as somebody who, as I've described at the outset, is regarded as a feminist icon,
yes,
actually expressing these opinions?
Yeah, and see, the context in Ballybunion was 100 years since women got the vote of suffragettes. And would suffragettes, how would they feel today? And I pointed out that 100 years ago, in 1918, World War II was coming to an end. Millions had died, and women then were without, had no vote, and effectively had no voice. And I said, by a savage irony, women are getting a voice this year, and we have to vote on whether or not to legalise abortion. And I said, 100 years after slaughter of the Somme, what are we voting on now? I don't mean that we're slaughtering our babies, but I did mean, do we know what abortion is? And I got a very good reception, mainly from women who said, you've made me think again. But think about what? I don't know. Nobody, Matt, really wanted to discuss it in detail. And I have questioned all the women who were about 20 and during the 83 ref amendment campaign, which was 35 years ago. Such women who, if they were 20 then, be 55 now. And we didn't like that campaign. We'd never thought of abortion, don't forget. 1983, people saying abortion is coming unless we block a loophole in the Constitution. I said to my friends, is abortion the killing of the baby? And they said to a woman, what are you asking that for? Should we need abortion? I said, yes, but I think we should know what we're doing. And they will not talk about it. It's a terribly uncomfortable silence in this country. And some of the best women, and women I trust and have known for a long time, will confine their speeches to, we must legalise abortion. It's a woman's right to choose. We trust women. I say, yes, but what are we doing? Just the way the time of trying to legalise contraception, I had to ask what we were doing, but I didn't really know an awful lot about it, Matt. And I discovered I don't know much about abortion either. And I had to, I've been, thank God for Google. I've been reading it. All the things that I raised at Ballybunion last Sunday, Saturday. I've been looking at Googling, what is abortion at 6 weeks? We were told in Una Mullally's book that your womb is scraped out. And I thought, back to 1983, though I did not see the videos those who call themselves pro-life, were going around the schools showing videos of most crude kind of abortion, babies dismembered in the womb. Now, I never saw those videos. I haven't seen any to date. The pro-lifers are very careful about what they're putting out in public. But I discovered that some woman in Una Mullally's book described her abortion at 6 weeks. She said it was painful and they were scraping out her womb. I thought, God almighty, at 6 weeks. And I looked up a photograph of a fetus at 6 weeks, but they're so small, you need a powerful microscope to see it. They're just the size of a pea. And the scraping that was being described was you insert a cannula into the vagina to open up the uterus. And then you scrape away the contents of the uterus. And I thought, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, were the pro-lifers right? Are the contents of the womb little feet, little arms, toenails? What is going on? And when I investigated further by scraping out the contents of the womb, one of the writers meant insert a cannula into your vagina to open up the neck of the cervix. And then they put in vacuum suction to suck out the contents of your womb. That's what one woman wrote. The other woman wrote, and she said it was painful enough, and the other woman wrote she compared it to scraping the makings of a scrambled egg out of your womb. They were probably under some mild sedation at the time, and I realised, I don't know now. I went to see an abortion once in Australia at the time of the Kerry Babies case and the Dingo Baby case in Australia, and the doctor, with the permission of the young woman, allowed me to watch, and he put what looked like the engine of a vacuum cleaner into her vagina. And what he sucked out of her uterus was a half pint bottle of reddish liquid. That was the contents of her uterus. And I was looking at the glass full of liquid, and he said, "You'll not see a baby in there." And indeed, he had to send the contents off in a sealed flask to the forensic authorities, Australian legal authorities, who examined it to make sure there was a pregnancy contained within that liquid. And the reason they do that in Australia is there were too many doctors falsely diagnosing pregnancy and then offering abortions and falsely making money. And the abortionist said to me, the abortionist doctor, he said, a telescope powerful enough to spot something in the moon would have to be used to spot something in that liquid. That's the only experience I have of abortion. But,
and Nell, where are you at now when it comes to this referendum in May?
See, it's upsetting me. I'm not going to waver, Matt. Yes, I'm going to vote yes to drop that provision in the Constitution, and yes, to legalise abortion, but I do so with some difficulty. What is it we're aborting? I believe abortion is necessary in far too many cases, but equally I believe the abortion rate could be brought down if we follow the advice of the wonderful TD Kate O'Connell of Fine Gael. She said we should have free contraception. I thought, you're absolutely right. That'll reduce the rate of abortion. Now, I know contraception fails. I know more now than I used to know. Yes, it can fail. Yes, you can have an abortion, but I subtitle my talk in Ballybunion as, here's your abortion, shut up. Do not mention homelessness. Do not mention what a young father was telling me last week. He's typical of many married couples now starting off in life. He and his wife both have paid work outside the home, and they're both lucky in that they have flexible schedules. He works in radio, she works as a university lecturer. They have to get up early in the morning. They've just bought a house. And they had to, the minute the woman was pregnant, put down her name in advance for a creche facility in Dublin, such is the pressure, to try and get a creche near where they live in Dundrum. And it is very difficult, and it's very expensive. And they get up early in the morning to dress the baby and bring it to a creche on the other side of Dublin. And then they come back at 4:30 in the afternoon to pick up the baby, bring it home, change its clothes, feed it. But then they're both exhausted, and they're both exhausted by 7:00. And when I was listening to this story, which I've heard often enough in the past, I thought, where is what Simone de Beauvoir called the plenitude of pregnancy, by which she meant that sense of completion and fullness and happiness? And I said at Ballybunion over the weekend, the only person I hear in this country celebrating birth and children is Miriam O'Callaghan, who has 8 children. She has a full-time nanny. She could afford it and all that, but still it was 8 children, and she's always bubbly about it. I don't get any joy in this country, Matt, now people talking about pregnancy. In fact, Matt, they're not talking about pregnancy in as much as I have conversations or go around to meetings. They're talking about abortion. End the pregnancy. And I think, are we missing something here? Is there something we're not demanding? And I'm convinced.
But Nell, I think the vast majority of pregnancies already, and will be, are carried to term. Parents are delighted to have children, but there are circumstances in which women, and often with partners, often without partners, make a decision for a variety of reasons that they cannot continue with the pregnancy. And as it happens, they either go to Britain to deal with the issue, or they get pills posted into the country to them. If we decide not to revoke the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, is any of that going to change?
I think it should change. There are several things that should change, Matt. There should be contraception, artificial contraception, should be free. We could, if we had a mind, we are McAlpine's Fusiliers, we could build 100,000 houses in a year, as was done in Britain. Well, they built 300,000. Macmillan in 1946, after World War One.
After World War Two.
He built three. First day in office, war decorated hero, Churchill came to him and said, I want you to build 3 million houses in the next 3 years. Macmillan goes home and writes his diary. Housing is not my cup of tea. There's a shortage of concrete, steel, wood. He produced 3 million houses, Matt, within 3 years. And Churchill said, people will call you beloved. And indeed, Macmillan became Prime Minister. And most of those 3 million houses are still in use today as social housing in good nick. I was speaking to Bertie Ahern about that 3 weeks ago. I said, Bertie, I think if you were in charge of housing, you would build it in a year. He said, yeah, it could be done. That's all it takes, a year, 100,000 houses. Then we're in a position to welcome houses. There will be, or to welcome birth, there will be room at the inn. I don't hear, especially the pro-lifers, I don't hear them talk about building social housing to facilitate a happy birth or a willing birth, a willing pregnancy. Not a bleep out of them. Nor do they say they support artificial contraception. They just say love both, and as I said, they're leaving out the man.
Final thing to Nan McCafferty. Mary O'Rourke was on the television with me the other night on TV3 on The Tonight Show, and she was explaining her difficulties and trying to make up her mind. And then she told an extraordinary story, which I did not expect from her, in which she told of two situations in Athlone where she was aware of women in serious trouble, and she helped them financially to go to England to have an abortion. And what struck me as I was talking to her about it was, you can have all your certainties and certitudes in life, but when you're faced with a situation unexpectedly and you see people in a situation of need, your certainties can be challenged and you have to adapt because of them.
Yes, and see, before I spoke at Ballybunion, Mary O'Rourke said a month ago that she and her beloved husband, what a love story that is, and they tried very hard to have a baby. It took them ages. They had one baby. And she said she can't understand, she could not then understand people aborting their children. I thought, God's sake, Mary. So I don't know if there's any connection between my speaking at the weekend and saying we have to think about this, or my own dilemmas, and her coming out, so to speak, on Tuesday and saying, yeah, she financed two abortions. But, Matt, I'm glad she did. We need more information. There has been no conversation around this amendment. Leo Varadkar comes on television. I'm a doctor. Does he say, by the way, we ought to have free contraception? That'll help reduce the abortion rate. Not at all. These men don't join the dots.
We look forward to hearing from Leo Varadkar about the referendum campaign at some stage over the next few weeks. Niall McCafferty, your piece in the book Repeal the Eighth is absolutely fascinating, and that's why I invited you to join us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.